With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hello and welcome to the Raptors Over Everything podcast. I'm your host, William Liu. Joining me on this week's episode is a live call-in show co-host, Josh Hart. Josh, how you doing?
I'm doing all right, Will. How are you?
You know, I don't know. I've been doing a lot of thinking, I guess, just because it's a time to kind of do a lot of thinking because, you know, I mean, when you cover sports and stuff like that, like you just, I mean, when you follow sports too, you just fall into sort of like a pattern, right? You know kind of what everything's supposed to be, kind of get a good rhythm in terms of like, this is when the games are, this is what to focus on, stuff like that. Like that almost happens without thinking. And I think, you know, when sports actually stop, you know, you take this time to go back and reflect, and you take this time to like just think about what's going on. And there's a lot going on, Josh. First off, I want to ask you, like, how are you feeling personally? Are you good? Are you okay? It's a lot, I'm sure, for you to take in.
Yeah. You know, I was whenever stories like the list one happen, as they seem to happen every so often, my mind goes back to late August of 2005. I was just turned 13 years old, and Hurricane Katrina happened. It's actually going to be the 15th anniversary of the levees breaking in Katrina on tomorrow morning, on the 28th. And I always go back to that time because it was the very first time in my life that the world and the experiences of Black people opened up to me this way. That my life and the Black people that I grew up around weren't just my family members and relatives and neighbors in Toronto or the south side of Chicago, where I spent many of my summers growing up at my aunt's house with my grandmother. But I was a part of a people that spanned this continent who had these similar experiences of tremendous poverty, tremendous grief, tremendous frustration, fear, and this feeling of not belonging to the place that we'd made home. And I've been returning to that time in my life, especially these last few days. And it's not an unfamiliar place. I, like many others, have returned to these thoughts time and time again. But that's where my mind's been at. Again, and feeling the levees break as they did 15 years ago and as they did yesterday afternoon is a familiar, if discomforting place, as always. So that's where my mind's at, Will.
Yeah. Yeah, I was discussing this with my partner earlier today, and the way they described it is sort of, you know, it's like PTSD. You know, I don't want to trivialize and draw the comparison to be exactly, because I don't know if it's exactly the same, but you know, when you see these videos of people getting specifically Black people at the hands of police just over and over again, you know, I mean, pretty much like, you know, week after week, month after month, like it's like PTSD. Like you don't ask to see these things. And, yeah. You know, I'm obviously not a Black person, but it's traumatizing just to see someone lose their life on camera like that. Like, yeah. Just period. It's so graphic. It's so violent.
Yeah.
And, you know, it happens just over and over again. And, you know, it's happened, unfortunately, again, this time, you know, Jacob Blake in Kenosha, Wisconsin. He is during an arrest. He gets shot 7 times in the back by a white police officer. This is on August 23rd, I guess last weekend. Jacob Blake, he's still alive. Actually, I just read a headline that said that he's been cuffed to his hospital bed somehow, which is just, again, unspeakably cruel. especially given the fact that he has apparently been become paralyzed, according
man
to...
from the waist down.
Yeah. And so, you know, this happens again, and, you know, I think for NBA players, you know, a lot of things have happened for NBA players, right? And I just want to maybe set the context here. In case anyone somehow has not followed it or has not been online for the last, like, week, you know, you have Chris Paul talking about it after OKC comes back with a great win. You have LeBron talking about it. You know, you have Doc Rivers. And just so many people has spoken out about this. And then, you know, for the Raptors specifically, they had no practice on Monday. You know, they had practice on Tuesday with media availability. Fred VanVleet and Norman Powell spoke to the media about what was going on and their feelings. And, you know, they were obviously frustrated, upset, like, angry, and sort of trying to keep their composure because it's such a difficult topic to speak about. And they had a lot to say. They were very open. And they also did a lot of that emotional work to sort of access those feelings and sort of do so publicly, which is not easy. And then, of course, Nick Nurse spoke as well. You know, they talked about then about the potential of, you know, potentially boycotting or striking a game. You know, and then on Wednesday, the Raptors had another practice. This time, it was supposed to be, at least from the PR team, they said it was supposed to be Pascal, Serge, Kyle, and Nick Nurse speaking. It turned out to, you know, Nick Nurse and Pascal spoke. I guess Serge and Kyle were not able to speak with the media, but, you know, kind of the same deal. You know, they discussed it a lot more. And then later that day on Wednesday, the Milwaukee Bucks made the sort of, historic decision, especially historic in the scope of the NBA. Absolutely historic decision. The Bucks players, although it was not necessarily planned, but they decided to sit out the game, and they were willing to forfeit the playoff game against the Orlando Magic. And that led to the game being, I guess, postponed would be the best word for it. But that game essentially was canceled. You know, the Magic, you know, walked off the floor. And then later on, you have games between OKC and Houston. That was canceled. You have games between the Lakers and Portland. Same deal. And then, of course, you have it across sports, like MLB, WNBA, and MLS, and even in cases like Naomi Osaka in tennis withdrawing, although she has since re-entered. And then, yeah, now it's Thursday where we're recording this. And I guess the players have met and they have agreed to come back. But I just want to circle back to you. Like, what was your first reaction to hearing the fact that the players may go on strike? And then when the players actually went through and followed up on it?
It was unbelievable, but it seemed also inevitable. It was like being told the sky's going to be or like pink when you walk outside tomorrow and really believing it was going to be that way because, you know, going into this, the bubble, the restart, the considerations the NBA made to have players have messages on their back and use their media availability to discuss issues that were close to them felt like a sea change, even compared to what we had before. The NBA recanting on its position that players would stand during the playing of the national anthems, all of those things felt like, you know, significant changes. And then for the players to be so bold as to say, you know, we are considering not playing, and then to see it happened, it was like unbelievable. And yeah, it just sort of felt like a response that matched the sort of as amazing and inevitable feeling as it was to see the players not show up to play. It was kind of that same feeling when you saw the footage of Jacob Blake being shot. That was unbelievable. Again, we're seeing this, but inevitable. So it felt like something that was in a long time coming, but something that I don't know if I ever truly believed I would see. And I couldn't be prouder of the guys who, and the men and the women who took it on themselves to take the risk of not showing up. You know, there are going to be ramifications that change the trajectory of these guys' careers. I don't think that we know what that looks like, but it's undeniable. Mm-hmm. And they're as super heroic as these guys look when they're playing, their character in these last few days has matched that. It's couldn't be prouder of George Hill. You know, I think we can all forget about game one in 2018 now. Giannis, Chris Paul, thinking back to Katrina and Chris Paul playing that year outside of New Orleans and in Oklahoma City. There's, again, that sort of, also, Chris Paul's been in the league for a long time, but thinking back to that time that, like, Oklahoma City and Houston were two cities that many of the Black people who survived Katrina were displaced to live because they were nearby cities where these people could find homes. And it was just like, it's this unbelievably moving day. And the feeling I had was pride and surprise. that part too. Seeing the Bucks closed locker room footage all afternoon while they were preparing to leave their locker room and make their statement while trying to get in touch with the Attorney General was like, I don't know. It felt like unbelievable. How about you, Will? How did you react as you sort of saw this news play out from your home, like many of us?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I have to admit, I was asked a lot about sort of, you know, do you think they will actually boycott or they'll actually strike? And I thought, you know, I think we had a discussion about this, and my thought was, you know, it's just such a short timeline to do it. Games are coming up every day, obviously. You need to have at least my thought was, you need to have a game plan, you need to have a list of demands, and then coordinate the whole effort and then do it. And you know, I think that kind of spoke from a position of privilege in that spot, just because, you know, in thinking back, like when you're frustrated, when you're upset, like, you know, I think really at that moment, I really empathized for the players. You know, they were trying to, there was a lot of reporters, obviously in the NBA, a lot of reporters inside the bubble trying to explain what's going on, trying to bridge the information gap. And a lot of it was kind of just explaining like, look, this shouldn't be surprising to anyone. I think, especially when you look at the reality that the players are living in, right? We're talking about people that have been away from their families for over a month, trapped in one spot. Now it's a nice spot. Food's there, you know, whatever. They have amenities. Like, we get it, right? But like, come on, man. Have you spent a month in a hotel before? It's not fun. They have been there, and, you know, they have been making every single effort possible. The players have, in terms of trying to affect change, trying to not only necessarily, I mean, in every form of change, right? Like, you know, we're talking about people, players going to protest. We saw Kyle Lowry in the streets protesting as part of the Black Lives Matter protests in Philadelphia. You know, we've seen players, you know, try to raise funds, like Norman Powell has, Fred VanVleet. Obviously, these guys have personal clothing lines. They're trying to raise funds. They're trying to, you know, engage in action. You know, we're seeing, you know, players even just go through the emotional labor of like having to express their experiences, share their sort of experiences, and very, very, at times, very traumatic experiences to the media and to the press, and so it could, you know, service the fans and sort of get their message out. And after doing all this work to see that, and of course to see how gruesome it was, like the situation is, there's this man being arrested first off in front of his kids, but then shot seven times in front of his children. And I feel like, you know, for so many players, they have kids, you know, you don't even necessarily need to have kids to empathize with that. But it was just such a heavy and emotional burden that I totally understand the players basically just saying, you know, it wasn't necessarily even a strike. We don't necessarily even need to have a whole game plan. We don't need to have a whole timeline, everything like that. We are just tired. This is an exhausting day. We cannot do this right now. It's ridiculous to go out there right now and to play basketball based on their current state and based on what they're dealing with. And even if it is just for one or two days to sort of recenter everything, to refocus their efforts, to at least even just get one or two days off. You know, I saw what Jared Kushner was basically poking fun at LeBron about sort of, having the luxury of taking a day off. Like, yeah, he should have the luxury of taking a day off, man. You know how heavy that is to deal with. And so I was, yeah. I mostly just felt sympathetic, you know, and I felt really bad for the players that they had to go through all this. So, yeah. So the day after, obviously there were reports coming out all throughout the night and Wednesday. Thursday morning, it was announced that the players have decided to resume the playoffs and that the playoffs could resume as early as the weekend. What were your thoughts, first off, on the players coming back to the restart? Did you feel any ways about it?
I support players in the decisions that are going to be weird. It's going to be very weird, especially to come back so soon. Because, I don't know, I can't imagine Stan Van Gundy on the call saying, well, you know, after we've not played since Wednesday for this gigantic historic occasion that's caused reflection around the sports world, let's talk about why Chris Middleton is like 0-for-7 in the first quarter. It's just going to be strange. It's not going to feel quite right. But I trust the players to make the most of it and understand that it's their, it is ultimately their careers and their work experience that is being determined. I'm hoping that as the players come back, they're going to be really tangible and really clear ways to continue to support the social causes, players and coaches and other team officials want to push with like money and with resources and attention. I hope that the kind of pressure the NBA scene that they can push on owners persists. And I hope that that means that we hear announcements of additional funds being released through the NBA to causes. You know, many people have compared it to league minimum salary per team for a decade. When put into those terms, it does seem like the NBA could do a lot more. And I think we'll be faced with the challenge to do a lot more. And yeah, I hope that, I'm not sure if tomorrow is realistic, but Saturday or whenever the games come back, that it comes with new ideas, big ideas for how, because that's the thing that we've seen, like this coronavirus and everything about the world in 2020 has shown us that big ideas are possible. The idea that you could say, no, we're not playing basketball today on a full slate of playoff games was unthinkable last year or even last month. We can now dream bigger. And I hope that, those who are responsible with dreaming things up now are really pushing the limits on what they think is possible. Because I believe them. I believe they'll figure out some great things. How about you? What do you think happens? Or when do you think games are back? Friday, Saturday? Like, that's what the league said they hope to do.
Yeah, I mean, I think this is a deeper conversation. I kind of wanted to get into it in terms of, like, what can I expect from the players? What's right for me to expect from the players? What responsibility am I putting onto them? And I feel like that's not necessarily fair. But I think, you know, what I saw was there was this moment where they had, because they have stopped playing, they had this incredible amount of leverage just as a labor force. And obviously without the NBA players, there is no NBA product, period. And if you think about actually what NBA teams and owners are providing at this point, you're not providing it's not like you have 30 arenas and, you know, all that stuff is happening. I guess 29 with the Staples Center being shared, but you know, like, you're not providing any of that stuff. You're not providing the infrastructure to, you know, have concession stands and all these other things. You're not, you know, the whole infrastructure around marketing and everything like that. Like, it's mostly just the labor of the players, and the players had taken that off the table. They stopped playing, and, you know, they had this opportunity there where you have to recognize that leverage is huge, and they stopped play, and then they got together to discuss what are the next steps. And, you know, obviously we don't know exactly what went on in that meeting. There's obviously been a lot of reporting, and I guess a lot of leaking as well. But essentially, it seems like the players sort of got right back together and I guess voted to continue playing, which is not surprising, I guess, because the players essentially voted to continue playing, you know,
back in April, May.
Exactly. June, whenever. When this same issue happened before, right? But at the same time, I thought, you know what, this is a great opportunity because I think the owners are very, very willing to not only support the movement, I guess, from a publicity standpoint, but also support the movement in the sense that, you know, this is a huge moment. And, you know, as Fred VanVleet says, you know, sometimes you got to put your nuts on the line. Like that, you, by stopping playing, you have put the owner's nuts on the line. And, you know, we'll see what their demands are going to be and what they come up with. But it was a little surprising, though. I really was anticipating, like, you know, even if the play comes back, like, give it like a week or something, just to take your time with something like this, right? But I guess the speed at which it was sort of determined that the play will come back is a little jarring. Even in like a 24/7 news cycle, you don't expect it to come full circle in the span of like 24 hours, and that was surprising.
Yeah, but was it like? It seemed like there was that meeting where the players were content to like suspend Wednesday's games, and then LeBron James and Kawhi Leonard said we're not coming back. Still need answers there, I guess. Mm-hmm. But then the rest of the players were, I guess, pretty committed to finishing the season. They're all there. There is the incentive to finish what you started, and I can't blame them guys for it. Yeah, the 24-hour turnaround was quite surprising. To be a fly on the wall of that meeting this morning, I guess.
I was going to say, man, I mean, Woj, Shams, I know one of those guys were in there with a live stream, you know, watching. Or maybe
yeah, how do they have so much?
Honestly, I feel like some players are probably just, like, turning on their phone. Like, you know, like, just calling in. And like essentially you could hear through that. I don't know, man, but they seem to have every single detail. Obviously there's what's the entire NBA in there. It's not surprising that some of this stuff will leak out. It always is interesting to me how the stuff leaks out too. Cause you saw overnight, like since there was such a rush to get information out there, there was so much stuff that was conflicting, so much stuff that was wrong. You know, reports were like, oh, LeBron and the Lakers and Clippers walked out. And then they're like, oh, but they, you know, they walked back in and LeBron was like trying to do all this. And LeBron was voting to cancel the season. But then LeBron was also the leading figure in terms of getting everyone back together. And it's like, I don't know what to believe. I don't know what the purpose of the leaks are. It's too much is happening at once. Kind of just went to sleep and read about it in the morning, I guess. But yeah, I think, you know, one thing that's really been interesting to me is sort of seeing the discussion that's gone on with people having opinions on what the athletes are doing, and specifically in terms of with social causes. And I guess to me, some of it didn't fully sit right because I think people have this natural relationship to the players where they root for a team, that player plays for their team. You know, and then they're sort of rooting for the player and that sort of that relationship. But, you know, when that happens, like, you're not necessarily rooting for the person. Like, the humanity is, I guess, easily overlooked, really. It's really just about the jersey and who's in it. Obviously, you can root for people and stuff like that. I'm not saying that these are mutually exclusive, but I feel like that's a lot of the relationship. And I felt like watching it play out, it almost seemed like instead of teams or whatever, people were just putting on essentially their, I don't know, I guess political views or views on society as a whole and sort of putting that onto the players. And now, you know, I've seen some people judge the players for making their decision and basically feeling like they have a say, you know what I mean? Like, just like how I feel like I have a say, quote unquote, of like how Kyle Lowry should guard a pick and roll. It felt like people were taking that same approach towards how players should react to what's going on. And what, like, I guess, societal role that they should play and what responsibility they carried. And that just didn't sit right with me. I don't know. What about you? I mean, what about seeing the fallout for all this and sort of how people are reacting to basically black athletes making decisions about their lives and, of course, how that affects other black people?
Yeah, it's complicated, I guess. Like, one of the ideas that I've been struggling with is why certain, like, I think one of the challenges that we saw was media members looking at players as their peers and people with the same motivations that they would have while players worked hard to make it very clear that they will often have very different motivations than the people who cover the league. And that comes from some of the problems that people talk about diversity in newsrooms, yada, yada, yada. And we can get into that, not today. But I think
we'll get into that, actually. I'd very much like to get into this whole pyramid of things.
The pyramid of factuals. I see the challenge it's around that idea that the motivations that and the backgrounds that some of these league journalists who cover the league may not match the backgrounds of these people who play in the league. And that is a big challenge. It's one that has very big resistors to diversifying newsrooms. Like they're obvious and very apparent, but I don't know. I don't like if it sounds like the only solution is bringing more diverse voices into these rooms that cover these players. And I also think that giving the other side of the guys who sort of like the Will Cains of the world, I don't need to pull punches there. I think on the other side of that are guys who say, well, you know, I'm just some white guy from the Midwest or the middle of any country, and I don't have much of a voice here. And I think that's also a dereliction of your duty. If you want to cover and tell stories of NBA athletes, you are a participant in Black Lives, because these are some of the most noteworthy and famous and influential Black people in the world. And to ignore that part of the story or to say you have no place in telling that part of the story is a cop-out. And it's one that, like, people, I think, more than ever, take notice of. Do you feel that same way?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think this gets to, obviously, the media aspect of it. And I think, you know, that's some frustration that I've seen Fred VanVleet share, and I've seen Malcolm Miller share that on Twitter as well, in terms of just, like, it feels like deja vu for the athletes who have to do the work to, I mean, honestly, in this case, they're trying to do the work to avoid and prevent Black people from being shot by the police. Like, so that's just the starters. But then in addition to actually actively doing the work, actively putting their money on the line and actually, I guess spilling their emotions on camera so that people can get a headline. They have to do it over and over again to people who it feels like they don't necessarily engage with the story, even if sometimes they're the ones writing the story or the ones that are producing or narrating or whatever with the story. And that's the part where I think Fred, you know, he was able to, in that interview that he did on Tuesday, he flipped that question onto the reporters. And he, you know, the reporters are trying to ask him, like, hey, you know, what do you think about when you watch this this honestly gruesome video of Jacob Blake? And he flipped it onto the reporter, and you can tell sort of the apprehension and sort of the I don't know, just the it just wasn't articulate. You know what I mean? Like, people who are literally trained and professionally are there day to day to speak, to write, to be articulate, to be on video, to be on radio, every single platform, all of a sudden
vocational interlocutors are stumbling over their words.
And very, you know, very basic questions, right? Yeah. Of how do you feel when you see something like this? And of course it's difficult to express it, but at the same time, you can kind of tell what that answer kind of went nowhere. And my point of this is just for, you know, because there's such a big disparity in terms of the people who cover the game of basketball don't look like the people who are playing the game of basketball. That disconnect leads to a situation where a lot of people who cover the media, cover the game, ask these questions and then get these quotes. They write the story and then they go home. And that's just it. It's just a story.
It doesn't relate to them.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's, I guess that's the part where I think the players pick up on that, because it's not necessarily just media. It's also fans, because the majority of fans who followed the NBA are also not people that look like the NBA players themselves. And so they don't share these same issues. They don't feel them firsthand. Maybe don't even feel them secondhand or thirdhand. And again, it's just a story for them. And it's, I mean, it's, I don't know what to do really about that, but it is just an unfortunate reality. And I'm sure for players, I mean, on top of the fact that they feel A, agitated that they've been in the bubble for months, and B, that there's a global pandemic going on, and C, there's like a very, very important time in their career in terms of, you know, how much they got to play in terms of like the importance of their games. And then C, you know, as black men having to watch a black father get shot in front of his children by police, then asked about it kind of disingenuously by the media. And of course, in that moment, I'd be pissed. I mean, I don't know how Fred and Norm weren't more pissed when they are asked about this, you know?
Yeah, and it's a credit to these players. And yeah, I'm not sure just how it's solved, because it's complicated. And there is something to be said about players being asked to engage with these topics in the first place. But on the other side, I agree with you that the people that they're engaging with these stories along with, in these, their interlocutors, the people mm-hmm. that help tell their stories in the media, need to prove a amount of care and engagement and sincerity with the ideas that these players are asking them to think about. Mm-hmm. There's that great video of Jacob Blake's sister asking for all of us to think of him as a father, and to think of him as a cousin, to think of him as a son, and to know him as a human, and to let that idea marinate. He's a human life, and the reason that all of these players are as incensed and as committed to action is because that humanity resonates with them. And that's sort of back to that idea I brought up at the beginning of this call. It was when I was 13 years old and seeing dead black bodies floating in the waters in New Orleans that I truly understood that my black life was a part of this broader black life, that, you know, people who that look like me were brought to this continent and spread all over it and are connected in a way that I still struggle to understand at times, but seeing these videos that are on my phone seemingly every summer, it is a very unique experience, and it's one that if you are going to engage with it at all, you need to do so very sincerely, because it's real, real stuff. It's real life.
Yeah, exactly. It's not just like I need to ask these questions.
It's not like asking, like, hey, what did you see on that pick and roll?
Exactly.
And how do you want to attack it next night? And yes, it's difficult to be a sports reporter or whatever, but if the idea that is so important and you hear shared by all these guys is building these relationships with these guys or what means the most to them, you have to show up then. You can't fail to show up for them as people in these moments where it hasn't been very abundantly clear already. Now more so than ever, these guys are hurting. These guys are deeply affected by the things that they are seeing. They are not able to hug their wives and their girlfriends or their children or their moms or dads or grandmas or grandpas because they are on a campus in Orlando for our entertainment. We can do as well to treat them with the sincerity, concern, and heartfelt questions that would seem appropriate. It's, yeah, I don't know. I don't want to get too tweaked.
No, I mean, but it's totally understandable. It's like, it's, you know what it is? It's a lot of work, but if you came to that story or you came to that media or Zoom call or whatever with these kind of questions in mind and these sort of thoughts and you were unprepared, like that's what that means is the gap is just privilege. Like that's what it is. You've never acknowledged the privilege. You never acknowledged truly what that means and sort of worked through it. And that's okay. But I mean, it's when it's in your face every day, right? Essentially the players gave everybody a chance to think about it, right? Okay. Maybe you've gone through your whole life without thinking about, you know, systemic racism. And anti-black racism specifically. Okay, but there's this whole global movement going on. There's a great chance right here to educate yourself. You have resources on your, you see resources everywhere you look, right? And educational purposes. And then when it happens again, and you know, you know, it's been what, 3 months?
Yeah.
2-3 months. And then you're asking the same questions, you're taking the same approach. I'm sure people are going to be enraged. And it's been uncomfortable to be in these calls. And I haven't asked a single question about this. It's because I just, it didn't really feel right. It feels like asking a lot out of someone to do it.
Yeah.
But then when you see the vacuum and the questions being asked, which are essentially along the lines of, can you tell us your experience and your traumas as a Black person so that we can write a story about it? And that, you're just like, you're not respecting the agency and what's going on. And that's been really disheartening to see. And that's been really gross to really to be part of. And of course, you know, I think the players reach a breaking point, and I think the players have said that. I think Fred did a really good job of doing that.
Yeah.
You know, Fred brought up the idea of a boycott. You know, he broached that with the media, and I think he was the first one to do so.
I think so as well.
Norm also talked about sort of just like, you know, Norm had to talk about sort of the experience of, you know, his mom educating him about how to handle police situations and interactions. And especially at such an early age, being taught that and basically being told about the realities of the world and how unfair it is. And I don't know, it's just a lot. But when you're sitting there and wondering, I mean, the questions that you should be asking the players are just like, are you okay? How are you doing?
How can I help?
Yeah, where are you mentally? How can we help? You know what I mean? Because like, I think sometimes players come to the media and they sit in that chair and the camera's on them, and most times they are basketball players, right? Most times they're there to talk about basketball, whatever. Like, you have to recognize sometimes that they're there as human beings. I mean, they're always there as human beings, but especially now they're there as human beings. And that was just, I mean, go back and watch some of the press conferences. It's uncomfortable, and it's also important, but you know, and then I think, you know, what I was trying to say earlier in terms of, you know, seeing sort of fans react, because I think the fans are a pretty important factor in this too, because I think a lot of people see the players as an extension of their beliefs and sort of an extension of their, I guess, representation. And that's okay. I guess that's part of what the deal is with fandom. But on that extent, so sort of, you know, for example, people wanting to advance political agendas or wanting to advance like labor movements, things like that, I get it. I totally understand. I share most of those same views. But at the same time, to expect the players to not only be the ones that are carrying the trauma of seeing all this happen and doing all the work to try to change it, but then also to sacrifice and, you know, do things so that it aligns and supports your belief, that part's been really unfair too. I don't think the fans have been totally fair to the players either.
Yeah, I agree. And I think that it's difficult. I think the conclusion that you and I have drawn is like, we trust these players to figure it out and to work out their engagement with these issues on the scale of them as professional athletes and I guess famous people. Mm-hmm. But we do need to understand that the onus for what happens next is on us.
Yes.
And how are we working through our own understanding of these issues? How are we educating ourselves? How are we empowering those causes that we wish to see empowered? And that's, I think, hopefully the challenge that the NBA puts before all of us is how do each of us become more engaged citizens and more engaged consumers of entertainment media so that, you know, it isn't the responsibility of these guys to figure out the game plan for how our society goes forward. They're, yeah, totally responsible for figuring out how the NBA goes forward. That's their part of the world.
Yeah.
But you and I, how do we ensure that these values and these causes that are important to you and I figure into the work that we make? And we're not going to announce anything now, but we have plans for ensuring the issues that we think are important are supported. And how do you, working at your desk job that happens in your home, in working to support the causes that matter to you? Because at the end of the day, it is not the responsibility of, I don't know, Tobias Harris to advance social justice. That is your responsibility. It is your responsibility to engage with the government at your local, federal, provincial level, it is your responsibility to have difficult conversations with those close to you if they need to happen. It is your responsibility to give money and time to causes that align with your values. Expecting that to be done by athletes is it's a fool's errand, and it is unfair to them.
Exactly. It feels unfair. And the fact that they're doing it anyway is, like, if you look at someone like LeBron, right? LeBron gets picked on
mercilessly.
He's one guy, man. Yeah. He is one man. Like, you couldn't even write like a Superman comic hero like this, where he's the best player at his sport, at, essentially of all time. I mean, whatever, debate. I don't care. One of the top three players at his position or in his sport all time. He does all this. He's also an actor. He's also opening schools. He's also paying for those schools. He's also lobbying to create more access to voting, and he's trying to support a stronger democracy. And, you know, he's also trying to use his platform to raise awareness and do all this. I mean, you wouldn't even write a fictitious character this way. It's not believable. And for LeBron to do all this and then people still criticize LeBron, I just think it's unfair. I get it, man. I mean, obviously, you know, lots of things are said about LeBron that's unfair. I'm on this podcast calling him the washed king in a basketball context, right? Like, part of it is what it is. But at the same time, I think especially in this one, it feels so unfair. It felt like it was unfair, just like it was unfair when people were really chastising him and saying, wow, LeBron's not really an activist because he refused to comment on the situation in Hong Kong, right?
Yeah.
And it somehow invalidated everything else that he did. Like, somehow he wasn't creating scholarships for an entire city to go through university and get education and provide GEDs for free to adults and their parents to you know, further their lives and their careers. Like, it's just disingenuous. And you know, I guess that was a lot of the talking point on the right, the Republican talking point. But now you kind of feel like the left talking point has also been the same of, like, you know, LeBron didn't use this opportunity to support and further what their idea was of a labor movement or what they wanted to see out of society. And I don't know, man. He's just trying to figure it out, man. Do you know how hard it is to try to figure this out and trying to find what to do and what's right and try to settle that, just A, morally, but B, then try to act on that? Like, it's just, again, it's just, there's just a lack of sympathy and people are demanding a little bit too much. And it's sad to see. It's a really sad situation. I feel bad for the players. I mean, we're already in a very tough spot, and they're in an only tougher spot now. One thing I also thought was interesting was sort of like the power dynamic in terms of the NBA. Like, so this is one of the few times the players have essentially threatened to lock out the owners. The owners have locked out the players many times. This is essentially the first time the players have done that to the owners. And I thought, you know, even honestly, I was talking to another Raptors writer about this. Like, even if, you know, maybe they don't ask for as much this time around, I feel like the groundwork has been set to that. Maybe the players can sort of use that threat and use that leverage and use that power. It's not even a threat, just use that leverage more often in the future. Cause I kind of would like to see players locking the owners out for once. You know what I mean?
I mean, yeah, it's an absolutely massive idea and like a sea change that changes sports forever. Mm-hmm. And to quote Monique, I would like to see it. It's going to be an unbelievable CBA negotiation that is like already determined. I hope that what comes from this is a real understanding for the role that the NBA players have in making what is the NBA. And I think that, you know, I don't know what happens. I'm sure that both sides are thinking that they'll get to redraw the lines of what pro basketball looks like in their own favor. Mm-hmm. But what is undeniable, and I agree with you, is that players have risen in their power to rival owners, not necessarily, not just financially, but with the way that they're able to curry favor with the political class. Yeah. That the Milwaukee Bucks were, from inside of their locker room, trying to get in touch with elected officials in Wisconsin, taking a play out of Wes Eden's playbook, the owner of that team himself. I think that idea that a group of NBA players can can and will now get in touch with some of the most difficult to reach and powerful people in our society is great, because that is going to bring to the table issues that may not be there right now. And that's exciting.
It is really exciting. But honestly, at the same time, I also think that, like, in a way, I do feel weirdly powerless. I mean, obviously, I'm not connected to the situation like that, but it does feel a little bit powerless in terms of just, like how much power do the players necessarily have? Because even if you follow essentially what Fred laid out in that scenario, where wouldn't it be nice if the Bucks team owner, lobbied government and try to change things in Wisconsin or I guess in Minnesota and pretty much all over. And you know, obviously we know these ultra rich, multi millionaires, sometimes billionaires, obviously have access and reach and sway. Wouldn't it be nice for them to change these things? But even then, I think about it, I'm just like, if you just think about systemic racism, I don't know what you can do to cure something like that. And even the players with as much platform and as much access and as much money and power and that they have, I don't even know how much they can do to change something like systemic racism. If you have hate in your heart and people have hate in their heart and they have, for some reason, were led to believe that one race of people, because of their skin color, are superior to another race or other races, like, I don't know what you can do with that, you know? And
yeah,
that's the part that's really scary. And I don't know what you can do with the fact that the States is a very violent country with a very violent history. And the fact that they have like 300 million guns just in the country, that's like one gun per person, you know? And
it's too many guns.
It's you know, and I guess maybe that's just, I guess I don't think NBA players were expecting to change society, but at the same time, I kind of do feel like they were really disillusioned with how much they thought they could change and how much stayed the same. You know what I mean? Cause when you watch Pascal's interviews and everything like that, they're just kind of talking about, like, you know, what was all this for? Did it even matter? And I do feel bad for them, you know, in that way, because that it has to feel really draining to be powerless when you try your best and to have the same result happen again.
What I hope NBA players and all of us following their lead is understanding the power that we have as individuals and as a group to affect change. Mm-hmm. It's a tale as old as time, but I do believe that, you know, each and every one of us, when committed to our goals and committed to using what's in our hand to make the world a better place, can achieve something. And I hope that that is the lesson that was learned by the NBA players. And like we said earlier, that all of us, we understand a little bit more about how each and every one of us can do our best to get in touch with, you know, we saw it. The Milwaukee Bucks weren't able to get in touch with the attorney general that they were looking for a number of hours. If you and I were tried, it would probably take a number of weeks because there's that difference in power. Mm-hmm. But understanding that, you know, you and I could spend our time trying to get in touch with our local politicians or our regional politicians or community leaders or business owners or whoever it is, that we all, each and every one of us, has a little bit of a little bit more power than we might think, and we might have got out of bed believing yesterday that we have. And what I hope happens for many of us who saw and are watching what happens in Orlando is that we feel empowered to raise our voices, make them heard. Americans are talking about how it's very important to vote, and absolutely, it's very important that. And that's been a central message. When the Washington Mystics were speaking at yesterday's game, they said, you know, remember to vote in November and to complete the census so your voice can be heard. That's the idea. The Milwaukee Bucks in that locker room raised their voice, and it's an example that we can all take.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. I mean, it is an incredible moment, too. Just thinking about it, right? Like, you're never going to forget a day like that where, you're never going to forget the days where things just go completely off script. And this one felt like it went off script. But then when you read it back and you kind of think back on it, it made complete sense that it went there. And I'm happy the NBA took this decision. I'm very proud as an NBA consumer, as a viewer, as someone who covers the game. to see the players do it. And I was, in a way, I know I just talked about it, it's unfair to sort of put your beliefs on another person. But at the same time, I can't lie that I do feel proud of the fact that, you know, the Raptors shared so many of the same beliefs that I do, and that, you know, they were willing to make, you know, actions, and they were able to take stands that, you know, that they went out the way to do that. I feel very proud of them to do so. And, you know, again, it's such a strange thing, because you rarely see millionaires, or I guess even in the case of LeBron and maybe one or two other NBA players, like billionaires, maybe, right? To take a social stand that is so close to the ones that I guess ordinary people face, marginalized people face. You don't think of millionaires as marginalized, but the NBA and I guess athletics in general is just as a rare space. And to see that they haven't necessarily lost their way, you know, maybe, you know, there's not, maybe not 100%, maybe there's some Michael Porter Juniors and stuff like that and whatever, but the fact that they haven't necessarily lost their way and lost their perspective is also genuinely cool. Cause I don't feel like, I feel like most other millionaires probably just voting, you know, conservative so that they can pay less taxes and keep their millions. Like, and the NBA players are firmly, I don't know, I guess they firmly have their heads on straight, you know?
Yeah. I hate to go back to it. It's that idea that the universality of seeing people that look like you suffer never sits right. Mm-hmm. It connects you to the world in this way that I believe is unique. I think that it's been, yeah, I agree with you. It's been inspiring to see NBA players by and large stand up for our community, raise their voices, bend the National Basketball Association towards justice this way, and ensure that advancing this social cause will be a fixture in the league for the rest of our lives. It's not going away. While you might not have Black Lives Matter painted on the court every game we watch next season or beyond it, there are ways in which, you know, the mission that was started with like Bill Russell and Kareem Abdul-Jabbar in the 60s and 70s continues through today and will only grow stronger. And that's like unbelievable to see. And we're seeing that evolution take place. And it seemed when we were really little that was maybe going away from the NBA, and the last decade or so has made it clear to me that that's a fixture in whatever the league looks like going forward.
Yeah, for sure. And again, you know, the NBA has plenty of reminders that, you know, money, fame, all this other stuff is not like a magic shield that you know, cloaks you away from these things. I mean, you think about like Masai, literally Masai, right? Everyone knows the story about what happened to Masai.
Like, Thabo Sefolosha, 36 years old, and was like still a pretty decent 3-point shooter.
Yeah, he was a good player. But even if he wasn't a good player, even if it was just like a random dude, like, you know what I mean?
He's like, I think he's still rostered by the Rockets, but he doesn't get like a ton of playing time. He was like a starter like before his incident with the New York Police Department. It's like these stories exist in the NBA.
Yeah. And you know, it should remind you that it's not, I don't know, it's not a political issue for the players. I think that's the thing that maybe they wanted, the last thing I really want to get off my chest is just like wanting to stop police officers from systemically and repeatedly killing Black people, unarmed Black people, and not only killing and harming Black people, but also getting away with it and having the legal system protect them and the justice system protect them and look the other way is not a political issue for the NBA, for players. It's not like, oh, I'm a Democrat, so I want to support this. No, it's they're Black people. They want to survive, and it's for their safety. And it's not a political issue. It might be a political issue for other people. I don't know why something like this would be politicized in the first place. It's really cynical, but it's not a political issue for the players. It's a personal issue. It's a human issue. And I don't know. I feel it's weird that it needs to be said even, you know, yeah. but I think it does. So, well, you're gonna be excited for Raptors Celtics.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. I'm gonna watch it. I'm gonna support the guys. Mm-hmm. And I'm gonna cheer my heart out for the Raptors. And I think that's what the players would expect, and that's what I'm sure they're going to want just as much love and affection from their fan base going forward, and they'll probably need it because it's going to be weird. It's mm-hmm. going to be weird. There's another 2 months in the bubble before there's a champion round. Mm-hmm. It's going to be a weird 2 months. Well, we have a lot more basketball. Will.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we'll see. I mean, the world's very unpredictable right now. It's hard to look further into the future. You never know what's going to happen, but
That's a good point.
Just be a better person, man. Just be a better person. Be more fair to people. Try to educate yourself. Try to get rid of some of your biases. And I don't know. Yeah, Raptors Celtics, baby. Can't wait. We've always wanted this series. Now we have it in the middle of a sweeping civil rights movement and also a global pandemic. Yeah, man.
I'm gonna come visit you in the IRL in the next couple days.
All right. Yeah, that sounds great, man.
Yeah.
You made more donuts? What happened?
No, I just want to see my friends. It's a tough week, and I have not been out of the house much because I don't know if you know this, global pandemic.
Yeah, that is true. Although, recently I finally braved sitting on an outdoor patio. And what'd you think? It was weird to... So it was like, I went to like a tapas restaurant, like a Portuguese tapas restaurant, which is a lot of great ones here around St. Clair. But I essentially had to, after every little dish and every course and every like drink, I was like putting Purell in my hands, and like the smell of Purell was like ruining the tapas a little bit, So
that sounds kind of filthy, dog.
I don't know. I mean, yeah, it was, I don't know. There's bigger issues than having this, smell. Aloe vera, yeah. So, I don't know, man. Have you been to patio yet? What do you think?
Yeah, I've gone to a couple. The first one was like great. I went to like the burger place right across from my apartment.
Oh, is this the one that was supposed to be Dewan's Destinations?
Yes, they're not in Toronto. The second time I went out to I don't even know what the place was called, but some restaurant down by the lake. And the first place was cool because they gave me like a single use cup. And the second place they handed me like, those like Pepsi brand plastic cups that you get in like all of those chain restaurants. And I looked at them like, I don't know if I can drink from a cup, like a cup that is not. And it's like, I tried not to use single use plastics, have a reusable bottle and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. But, the Rona, it's really made me nervous around like cups other people wash.
I mean, maybe my hope is that, eventually a vaccine is out, it's accessible, everyone can get it, and we can kind of like put it into the past like with other things. But maybe with, this improves hygiene standards going forward, maybe I'm thinking like I'll probably just carry Purell on me going forward.
Yeah, probably for the rest of your And
I'll probably wear a mask when I go on the subway,
My hands have aged 10 years. That's the weird part. My hands are like, look so old now. But I don't know. It is what it is. It's the right thing to do.
Someone's got to put some isopropyl alcohol in lotion. I feel like that's a business opportunity. Free idea right there. Someone go make millions off this.
And then donate it to police reform initiatives, right, Will?
Oh, man. You know what? No more police reform initiatives, man. Just defund them.
All right, let's go.
Yeah, just take that money away. Forget it, man. It's a tough situation. It's a tough conversation, and honestly, circling back to the beginning of this, like, while I was sort of, I'll admit, I was multitasking. I was running a little bit behind on my Raptors Celtics preview coverage, and I was watching some video and grabbing some video and trying to put together the story about how important it is for the Raptors to stop Jaylen Brown and Kemba Walker, and sort of puts together some clips and sort of how to guard them and stuff like that. Some like usual, basketball stuff. And I'm listening to the press conferences on Tuesday, and I'm just thinking like, bro, I'm a clown. Like, what am I doing? What am I doing? And honestly, I couldn't bring myself up to like finish what I was trying to write, or, you know, finish the editing. Cause it's just like the players themselves, that's not where their minds were at. Like it's hard to just be like, all right, well, Jaylen Brown said all these things, but also, you know, you want to force him to his left hand because he finishes worse that way. Like it's just weird. You know what I mean? Like I can't get past the cognitive dissonance, and I can't compartmentalize these things anymore. And I'm sure it's even harder for the players, you know? So.
Yeah.
Well, we'll see. The games, I don't know when it's scheduled. I guess this weekend somewhere, but yeah.
Yeah, I hope everybody stays safe, stays healthy, mm-hmm. Stays patient for whenever these guys decide to come back. Yep. It's up to them. It's their jobs. You guys, the rest of our listeners have the luxury of going into their own jobs until then.
Yeah, there you go. So please take care. Please be a little bit more mindful. Try to support the players. I mean, find it in your heart to support the players. I don't think it's very hard to, but if you find it hard to, like, find out why that's hard and try to work on that. And yeah, Josh, thanks for, you know, speaking as always. Listen to a live call-in show next
September 1st. We'll be back then, assuming there's basketball, I guess.
I was going to say, yeah, we initially planned that for being right after game 3 of the Celtics series, but we have no idea when the schedule is. So,
well, if they start on whatever, we'll see.
We'll let you know. We'll let you know. Yeah. Just sit by the phone. Just sit by the phone. Just wait, you know?
One last plug. You guys should watch the latest episode of Raptors Group Chat.
Yep.
It was very, very, very good.
Very needed.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Essential.
Yeah, essential viewing. Yeah, Raptors Group Chat on Yahoo Sports Canada, the YouTube page. You know, Alex, Iman, Yasmin, and Sahal. You know, it's a heavy subject, but honestly, just if you find it difficult to engage with, please just continue to try and think through it and get through it, because it's very important. You're probably going to be a better person after doing it. So,
absolutely.
Yeah. Well, I'll speak to everybody when the Raptors play another playoff game.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads. Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.